You are listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of January 30th, 2013. So like a mid-80s hardcore record, let's go!
Let's go!
Yo, Punk News. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and we're here to talk about the most happening events of the week. We're going to be talking about Black Flag. We're going to be talking about the other Black Flag. We're going to be talking about Lawrence Arms coming back from the dead and the Bronx coming back from the dead. We're going to talk about Morrissey on the hospital bed. We're going to talk about the greatest festival of all time, Punk Rock Bowling 2013. And we're also going to talk about the wildly exciting event of the increase in stamp prices. So without further ado, we're going to kick it off with a jam. I think we got a jam from Chris Moran. What do you got, Chris Moran?
Yeah, so I'm going to play a song for you from a band called Roll the Tanks. Roll the Tanks are an LA-based band. A few years ago, they kind of got some hype behind them for their debut LP, which had sort of a Clash vibe to it, if you will, maybe British rock. Since they've kind of morphed into more of a, dare I say, dancey, shimmy shuffle kind of groove. But anyways, they've got a new EP out, and we're going to go ahead and play you the first track off of it. The EP is titled EP, and this is the song Towing the Line from Roll the Tanks.
We'll be right back.
we're back. Joining me is the Richmond Radical, the Virginia Vindicator, video editor Chris Moran. Chris, how you doing?
Let's go.
Also with me is the man who puts all the girls in a trance when he dances in his tight pants, reviews editor Brian Yance. E. Brian, how you doing?
I'm great. That's the best intro anyone has ever given me. So thank you for that.
Quite welcome. Also recording the whole operation is the Lord of the Boards and Microphone Cords, the Rex of the Decks, and does a microphone check. Sound guy Nariman, hit us with a sweet scratch or two. All right, so anyway, fellas, today, first thing we're going to be talking about is Black Flag and Black Flag. I've got opinions on this, so I'm going to flip the round table and just talk, and then you guys can tell me if I'm wrong or not, all right? Because I got opinions on this. As people probably know, there's been two versions of Black Flag that have recently reunited, if you will. There's one version calling itself just Flag, which is Keith Morris, the first singer of Black Flag, Chuck Dukowski, probably what most people would call the main bass player of Black Flag, Steven Egerton, and also who's the fourth person in Black Flag,
Bill Stevenson.
Bill Stevenson from the Descendants.
Who was also in Black Flag for a time.
Yep. That's right. He was in Black Flag during the mid-period. I think he replaced Robo, actually, briefly.
Yep.
They're calling themselves Flag. They're playing punk rock bowling, and I think to your opinion shows. Also reuniting is actually Black Flag, which includes founding member and sole concert member Greg Ginn on guitar, third Black Flag vocalist Ron Reyes, and nobody knows who else is going to be in the band. There was a misinformation, not put out by Punk News, but put out by another website, that's Chuck Dukowski was in that band. Chuck Dukowski is not in Black Flag. Chuck Dukowski is only in Flag. And so
Jesus Christ.
Chuck Dukowski's also in CD6 and some other bands too. But so anyway, this has been like, I'm really surprised by the feedback that a lot of the commenters put. A lot of the commenters put like, this is stupid, or I don't want to see this. And some people even said, this is the worst news I ever heard. And honestly, I think you people are completely wrong. I think you're completely wrong. And I'll tell you why. When like Refuse got back together, people were like, oh my God, Refuse is the greatest thing ever. All right, Refuse is a cool band. I saw them live. They were great. Do you people realize this is Black Flag reuniting?
No,
Black
it's not.
Flag? Like the greatest band ever? Like the greatest collection of music ever made is reuniting? And here's why. Here's why it's so great. A, in one band you got Keith Morris, who is still completely awesome. He's an off, as I'm sure you guys know, and he is phenomenal. You've got Chuck Dukowski in that band. Chuck's in the CD6, and he was briefly in Blackface. I've seen all those. I haven't seen Blackface, but I've seen CD6. CD6 is amazing. Plus, you've got Bill Stevenson and Steven Egerton. So how is that not going to be incredible? And in fact, we know it's going to be incredible because that lineup played a four-song set last year. People loved it. It was insane. Then on the other side, see, I think most people think that show is going to be a good show, but they're like, but it's not Black Flag. Well, you know what? Who cares if it's not Black Flag? It's four incredible musicians playing the greatest music ever written. I mean, I don't see a problem here. It doesn't matter if it's Black Flag or not. It's four guys that are still in their prime, even though their prime has been like 30 years, that are going just to knock the house down with the jams. I mean, it doesn't matter if it actually – I don't think people are going to this – like, I guess people – somewhere along the line, in the mid-80s, this concept developed that like songs were like these sacred things that if you played them after the original band broke up, it made the original band not stand for what it used to stand for. That's stupid. Songs are like – I mean, it is. Like, you don't hurt Nervous Breakdown by having Keith Morris and Chuck Dukowski play Nervous Breakdown in 2013. Rather, you show that that song is still the jam. Black Flag was the greatest band ever, or maybe – one of the greatest bands ever. And the fact that the Black Flag originally broke up and that the guys who were in the band are playing those songs, like, is awesome. There's no downside to that at all. On the other side, I think a lot of people are saying, well, that's going to be good. A lot of people were saying that the Greg Ginn band is going to be bad. Honestly, I think those people don't really – it could be good or it could be bad. I actually think it's going to be good. Greg Ginn did reunite Black Flag briefly in 2003,
and
I think.
And it sucked.
it was bad because it was Greg Ginn. It was a drum machine.
There was an iPod. Yeah.
Dez Kadena and Mike V of the Rats. So that was terrible. However, last year Greg Ginn played with Chavo, Ron Reyes in Canada for his birthday, and there's some of those YouTubes are on video. And honestly, it's not as good as Keith Morris, but it's pretty damn good. And also, but however, they also played a new song, and the new song was bad. However, no matter what, though, I've seen Greg Ginn live play like Greg Ginn solo stuff. He only plays like two songs in like 45 minutes because he basically just does like a 40-minute solo. And like if you listen to an album, it'd be bad. But just seeing how incredibly, insanely, technically talented this guy is, it's like seeing the most amazing acrobat you've ever seen. Like, he, I think, honestly, I think in 200 years from now, people are going to change their mind about Greg Ginn. Yes, like, he probably ripped a lot of people off for a lot of money. Yes, he's probably difficult to get along with. But I think he makes connections and hears things we can't hear because we're all too dumb, because he's such an incredible genius. If you want proof of his genius, one last thing to say, go to YouTube and Google his Coachella performance from last year. For the first half, he plays a guitar, and the second half, he plays a theremin. Now, have you ever seen like a professional theremin player play a theremin? It goes like, it's like, that's like somebody that's been practicing for the theremin for like 10 years. Greg Ginn gets up to play the theremin, like, because the theremin has no strings. You play the air because it's like magnetic fields. He plays the theremin like it's a freaking guitar. It is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. So check that out. That's my opinion. You can disagree, but that's what I got to say.
I'm gonna disagree. All right, because yeah. Greg Ginn's. Let me tell you. He's talented. Nobody takes that away. But John, your whole statement there about Greg Ginn was pretty much, he's bad because this, he sucks because this, he's a dick because this, but he's a good musician, so this is going to be cool. The guy's a fucking...
That is my statement. I don't disagree with that. That is my statement.
The thing is, I think he's only doing this because the other guys are doing something, and I think he's trying to say, hey guys, Black Flag over here, I'm Black Flag, hey, this is me, Black Flag, and... It's sad. The guy needs to just fucking go crawl into his hole with his cats and fucking just like stay away. I mean, I have no problem with the flag thing.
He found Black Flag. I mean, he is Black Flag.
Yes and no. I mean, there were a lot of different pieces of Black Flag. I mean, you can't say that Henry Rollins did not have a major contribution to that band. You can't say that Keith Morris did not have a major contribution to that band. I mean, that's like saying, well, I compare this. Think about like the Misfits. I don't like Misfits without Shorty, but they've actually been active longer without him than they were with him.
By like a factor of four.
And you know, but the thing is, people still discredit to this day. I mean, but this isn't comparable even on that level, because Greg Ginn hasn't been keeping it active. It's just been this random pop-up of him trying to, I don't know, maybe he gets a whim to go out and play some Black Flag songs, and he, if anything, he's butchering the legacy.
He's
half-assing it. He brings a drum machine, yeah, and calls that a Black Flag reunion. Really?
Yeah, he doesn't get a whim so much as he gets a Google alert that somebody else is playing Black Flag songs, and then he has to, you have to admit the timing of this is very suspect at best. It just reeks of like kind of like gross, like opportunistic bullshit to me.
I mean, I agree in that I'm sure he wouldn't have formed Black Flag without this. But I mean, he found a Black Flag. He wrote almost all the early songs and even a lot of the crappy later songs. Sure. And so it's really comparable to the Van Halen thing. When Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony were touring as the other half, the other Van Halen brothers got mad because they say, there is no other half. Without us, there is no Van Halen. And as crazy as Greg Ginn is, he is Black Flag. And I mean, he founded it. He was the only guy in all incarnations. That's not to say Flag isn't going to be awesome and Flag isn't going to be better than Greg Ginn's Black Flag, because I think Flag will be better than Greg Ginn's Black Flag. But I'm saying you can't fault Greg Ginn for touring under the Black Flag name. Because
you can. He can do. I mean, he has the legal right to. But I mean, I'll fault him all day because he's not in it for the right reasons, and it's contrived, and it's him just, he's not doing it any justice. So I'll fault the man all day long for it. It's crap.
I'm bullshit. I think he's probably in it for the money, but also like let's say I was in a band and I wrote all the songs. You know, John's Wonder Band, right? And then somebody else starts playing songs as John's Wonder Band. Well, I wouldn't fault myself for saying, no, I'm the real John's Wonder Band and playing those songs. Like from his perspective, they're stealing his songs from him.
And no one is saying that they're not his songs, but if he's not going to do them right, which he has had no interest in doing even when he's emerged to do this, then at least they're trying to carry on something that has meaning to a lot of people in a very respectful way, and putting some effort and some dignity into it. What he's doing is just garbage, and he's disservicing the name of Black Flag.
Well, I won't agree with that. I won't say he's disservicing the name of Black Flag, but I will agree that I think Keith Morris and Chuck Dukowski have more pure intentions, if you will.
I mean, I saw, you know, I went and saw when Rollins did the
it was awesome!
Yeah, that was amazing. I mean, Keith Morris was involved in that too, and it was phenomenal. And you can tell it was two people who were enjoying what was in the past, but bringing it to a new audience, and they loved it, and they did it for a good cause as well, for the West Memphis 3. But Ginn's effort is crap, and you know, I wish the guy would just, you know, he can hold on to it all day long and say, yes, I own Black Flag, I wrote the song. Sure you did. But I mean, if you're not going to do it right, then get the hell out of the way and let the people do it right.
I think
the fact that he started the band, he wrote the songs, that he has been every version of the band that has existed from, you know, 1976 until now, like, obviously we can't take that away from him, but at the same time, it doesn't make him infallible when it comes to bullshit like this. Like, there's no reason that we can, you know, not discredit him for what he's doing, because it's very clear on the surface, like, what is happening here. And I don't understand why anyone would try to dispute that. And I'm not saying you are, John. I don't think you are.
We can argue.
Some people might. No, I don't want to argue. I don't think you are.
I think maybe, Brian, you and I come from a slightly different perspective, and that I think in my mind, I think Greg Ginn is infallible in my mind.
So he's like the Pope. He's like your Pope.
He's my punk rock Pope, and because like the mere fact that he wrote most of Nervous Breakdown, and even Keith Morris said that in my interview with Keith Morris. So the fact that he wrote Nervous Breakdown, no matter what he does, in my mind, he can never tarnish Nervous Breakdown. You see what I'm saying?
John, you got to separate Greg Ginn from the artist and what he has accomplished in his career and the talented person that he is from the actions of Greg Ginn.
See, I disagree. I think perhaps I think you two and I come from a different perspective. And people often say, well, you have to separate the art from the artist. I don't think there's such a thing as that. I think the artist is the art.
Well, whatever he's doing with this live shit, I wouldn't classify as art.
So, final word, Yancey, would you go see Flag? Would you go see Black Flag?
I would absolutely go see Flag. I would be extremely stoked to do so. I would probably not go see Black Flag.
Chris?
I would see Flag if it were convenient. I don't see myself making a big trip just to see it. I'd definitely see it if it was convenient. Black Flag, if I didn't have to pay, I'd go, but only to see like how many people there are going to heckle and just to witness the car wreck that it's going to be.
Yo, Greg Ginn, if you're listening, put Chris Moran on the list and he'll come check it out.
Yeah. I'll film that debacle.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of film debacles, the Lawrence Arms are working on a new album. If you guys remember, they had a DVD out a little while ago, which was a drunken recording. But they've got a new album coming out, their first since 2006. Brendan Kelly, who is the lead vocalist co-lead vocalist of Lawrence Arms, right?
Yeah.
This is what he said. He said, the record is going to be cool. It's going to be different as shit from our last one. I can't offer you too much in the way of details because, well, we have been told by our overlords to tease the information out as slowly as possible in order to maximize everyone's excitement. But I can tell you there are 11 songs. One of them will be left off for other nefarious purposes. Chris has written 4 songs and the other 7 are mine. There are no shredding guitar solos, nor are there any slap bass. So what are you guys thinking of this?
I'm down.
I'm stoked. I think along with a lot of people who read our site and a lot of people who contribute to our site, that the Lawrence Arms are a pretty important band to most of us, myself included. And it's been way too long since they've, you know, released an album. Obviously, it's been 7 years and they've kind of been doing their own shit in the meantime. And none of it has really lived up to the same kind of level, in my opinion, as their albums have. So the fact that they're kind of getting back together and kind of doing this, and, you know, I mean, they never really broke up, but, you know, they're, you know, Brendan had kids and, you know, Chris moved to Portland and Neil is, I don't know, doing whatever Neil does. You know, it's really exciting. And like, I generally like don't really give a shit about most of the quote unquote org core bands. Like, I find most of them pretty boring, to be perfectly honest, but you know, these guys are great, and they're one of the bands that, like, without them, I probably wouldn't be on the show right now talking to you guys, to be perfectly honest. So
really,
absolutely, and like whatever they put out, it will probably be awesome. I'm sure I will celebrate it, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what they come up with, because they're extremely talented when they're all together, you know. So yeah, for sure. Chris, what do you think, man?
I'm stoked. You know, I'm kind of in the same place as you, Brian, as far as just everything they put out, I've been a fan of. What's really interesting to me about the Lawrence Arms is, you know, you have a lot of bands, personalities, whatever you want to call it, who, you know, they do the Twitter thing and they do Facebook and whatever else. It's, and we've talked about this on the show before, but, you know, Brendan is a very interesting character. I mean, everything from, you know, his view on things, his sense of humor, but the fact that, you know, he's sort of, through his blog and other ways, he's sort of opened himself up to, you know, people around the world to know him, you know, aside from just the dude in the Lawrence Arms, to, you know, his, you know, fatherly duties and all that jazz. But, you know, I think he's just a really fascinating person, and I'm really stoked to see that he's doing something creative again, because, you know, kind of to just add on what you said, when him and Chris and Neil get together, it's the best comparison I've ever heard is it's eerily similar to Jawbreaker. And I don't just mean musically. I just mean that cohesion they have. And, yeah. You know, and there's elements of Jawbreaker in there. Obviously Brendan is a very talented writer. Blake is a very talented writer. And I'm sure our two or three listeners will probably want to put my head on a fucking pitchfork for comparing him to Blake, but I see him that way. I think he's of that same vein.
And anyone who wants to put your head on a pitchfork for that obviously didn't listen to that Forgetters full length. Yikes! that thing is not good. Not good at all.
Remember when that double 7-inch came out of the Forgetters? People were like, I can't wait. Everyone was let down. However, when that full length came out, some people were loving it, some people were hating it. Do you think it was all hype, that Forgetters 12-inch?
Yeah, it's all hype. Like Blake,
of course.
Yeah, it's Blake. Like, he, like, we're like, Greg Ginn is your Pope. Like, Blake is like the Pope of like everybody else that reads Pop News for the most part. And even when he writes like stupid songs, like he wrote for that Forgetters full length, people are like, "Oh, it's awesome! It sounds great! It's classic Blake." Nope, it's not. Doesn't sound good, not at all. But so,
honestly, like, I'm not a huge Lawrence Arms fan. I've never heard a Lawrence Arms album all the way through, and I think I think there's a large minority of Punk News readers that are in my camp. What am I missing out on the Lawrence Arms? What makes the Lawrence Arms this genius band?
It's a combination of the lyrics, the harmonies, but it's not. But when you have things, when you have those elements that are done as well as the Lawrence Arms, usually it's not as I don't want to say heavy, but not as you know, just they have this like brilliant sloppiness to them, where it's like this huge mess that just comes together and just sounds amazing. I don't know, Brian, you might be able to illustrate this better than I am right now.
It's interesting because I feel like in a weird way, like their stature and their talent kind of gets understated because they've been away for so long, and so many bands have aped their sound since they've been gone. And, You kind of forget that, like, not everybody is good at playing this type of music. Like, it sounds like it's easy to make, and a lot of bands try, but most of them come off as trite and boring, at least in my opinion. And when those three guys get together, and their talent and their writing prowess, and the way they kind of, you know, take these lyrics that have like these weird like historical references mixed in with like personal politics, mixed in with I don't know, just name anything that, you know, you would think of, like pop culture references that are like really smart and kind of clever and kind of funny, but also like kind of heartfelt. And it's like no one else is doing what they're doing, like even if they're trying. And that's kind of what makes them so special, I think.
You know, you also have like there's so many elements to that band being a three piece, and they have a sound that sounds so much bigger than a three piece. I mean, everything from you have Chris's almost like eloquent style of singing versus Brendan's throaty, you know, very rough, you know, singing style. It's there's just so many different pieces of that band. It's like, wow, they're really a three piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I'm just really excited that they're kind of coming back. I hope they play some more shows. I had the privilege of I actually saw them play in Cleveland in the short time that I lived there last year. I saw them play in last January actually, and it was awesome. I mean, you know, it's always a good feeling to kind of be in the same room with about 400 other people, and you're all on the same page, and you're all kind of, you know, you're all there for the same reason, and it's like it's just a really great feeling. And, you know, I'm looking forward to more of that in 2013 for sure. So
do you guys think Brendan Kelly really is like the drunkard that he paints himself out to be, or is he more of like a Dean Martin character where he acts like he's drunk all the time but he's not?
Both.
Yeah, a little bit of both. I think he exaggerates it just a little bit when he's on stage. But he definitely does imbibe quite a bit. But at this point, it's so like ingratiated into like his onstage personality that he sort of can't not do it, because if he does, people will wonder what's going on with them, you know? Like, that's kind of what they come to see in a way.
Well, what, you know, and what I've seen from him is he does have a, at least the times I've seen this, he has sort of a going on stage habit where I've seen him where he'll go and down like four shots in the course of a couple minutes. And, you know, that could contribute to why you see him all before the show and he's fine. And then suddenly on stage, he's like, whoa. But, you know, they are definitely, and it's not just Brendan, other members of that band heavily get down before they hit the stage. So,
Well, speaking of getting down on the stage, the Bronx are back. After being at Mariachi Bronx for about 3 or 4 years now, they're back with the Bronx 4, which follows the Bronx 3. You can stream it on RollingStone.com. What are you guys thinking of the Bronx?
I think the record's really good. Yeah, it's different from what they've been doing. I mean, ever since the first record, they've kind of been going in this direction of more of like a loud, fun, like rowdy kind of rock band. That's like, but not like in a cheesy way, you know what I mean? And that's kind of what this record is. It's almost like a fusion of that sound. And I think it's great. Like, there's like a ton of riffs on this record. The choruses are huge and awesome. And I don't know if it's my favorite Bronx record. The first one is probably still my favorite. This might be my second favorite, though. But I honestly enjoy Mariachi El Bronx a little bit more, and I still do. But at the same time, I'm glad that this record exists. I'm glad that they kind of got back together and did this instead of another Mariachi record. But yeah, there's a ton of really good jams on this record. I'm pretty excited. I've had it for about a month now, and I'm listening to it a lot. And every time I listen to it, I enjoy it a little bit more. And it's, you know, it's just a fun record to just kind of play loud, sing along to, and that's about all I need from a band like the Bronx. I don't need anything deeper than that necessarily, you know? So
I like, you know, what really hit me about this record was, the vocals. I mean, the vocals are, I think the vocals on Bronx 3 were a little more singy, whereas he has a really urgent sound in his voice. And I always hate using that word because every review uses urgent, but it's true. I mean, he's like belting out his, you know, his lyrics, and it's very reminiscent of the first record, on a slower pace though, obviously. And even I'd say the closest thing I'd compare it to is probably that song History Stranglers on Bronx 2. That's what this record's like, the way he sings reminds me of. I think The first half of this record is phenomenal. The second one for me kind of goes a little flat, though. I don't know. I think, Brian, you're going to review it, so you'll. I don't want to go too much into detail about my thoughts.
But I think there's a bunch of good songs in the second half. I think Torches is fucking awesome. I think Ribcage is great. That's the first single that they kind of released from the record that a bunch of people got bummed out about for some reason. Like, what are you talking about? That song rules. Like, it's got fast drums. It's got riffs. It's got everything you would want from this band. But I almost don't want to say too much either because I am going to review it and I'd rather save my thoughts for the review. But overall, I would say it's pretty good and happy to have it in my life. And the cover art is awesome as well. So check that out.
Yeah, that's the best quote for an album ever. I'm happy to have it in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I am. I'm extremely happy to have it in my life.
So I think Kier's going to bring us one of the new Bronx jams, right?
That is correct.
All right. Well, should we give it a spin?
We shall.
Let's spin it around. Let's go.
Sup. It's Kira saying hello to you from Baltimore. And this week I have a new track from LA's The Bronx from their forthcoming studio album, The Bronx 4, out on February 5th. And whereas their side project, Mariachi El Bronx, has been pretty active in recent time, this is the first proper Bronx album in 5 years. The album as a whole is pretty gosh darn delightful. It has that pulsing drum beat with slightly noisy poppy guitars and anthem-like choruses. It's really just a lot of fun. I know that staff interviewer Jen Handley is working on transcribing an interview he just did with them that we'll be posting soon, so get excited for that. And get excited to hear this new track that we're going to play for you right now called Youth Wasted. So this is the Bronx. Have a great week. We'll be right back.
Let's go. We're back with part two, part two, part two. All right. So anyways, I don't know. Maybe the punk news readership might not know this, but Morrissey had a whole bunch of concerts scheduled for the United States. He had concerts last year scheduled, but he had to postpone them because his mother got sick. Well, unfortunately for this North American tour, he had to postpone it again because he's been diagnosed with a bleeding ulcer. Although doctors expect him to make a full recovery. What that means, he's canceled all his shows until February 9th and maybe even after that. I know a lot of the punk news people seem to hate on Morrissey, but not necessarily personally, but I love Morrissey's music, man. I think he's a great musician and a great lyricist. But the question is, he's notorious for canceling concerts. He's canceled like 3 concerts in San Francisco in a row. So, I mean, I don't think he's faking this, but do you guys think he's used up too many of his free passes or what?
John, I've got to say something here, Brian. I don't mean to cut you off. I've got to say something here. John, I'm calling you out. I think you only like old shit. mean, you're telling me you like Morrissey, but the Lawrence Arms are like, meh.
Similar?
I think there's distant similarities between them.
I'm not a Lawrence Arms hater. What Lawrence Arms album should I really listen to? What's going to blow me away? Because, you know, honestly, bands get one shot with me, like one album.
Everyone is going to tell you, you got to listen to the greatest stories ever told. I disagree. I think Apathy and Exhaustion is their best record, and it's the most diverse, too. It has the most
varied style. I have Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
That's like 2 songs, isn't it?
4 and a bonus track.
Yeah. Is it 5?
Yeah.
So I should listen to Apathy?
Yes. Apathy. Here's the thing. If you like Apathy, then it's like the perfect lead into Greatest Story Ever Told. Greatest Story Ever Told is not the best one for somebody who's never really listened to Lawrence Arms.
But it is their best record and one of the best records ever created.
True, but the band's best records aren't always the first one you should listen to.
No, you're right. That is absolutely true.
But anyways, I took us off the topic. I don't like Morrissey. He's too self-obsessed for me. I could care less about, you know, his stupid views on everything and how he wants to ram them down everybody's throat. I don't like the man. The Smiths were all right, good. The Smiths were a good band. Whoop-de-doo. You know, I'll listen to a Smiths record if I want to listen to the Smiths. I think Morrissey is he's an asshole. Brian, you can talk to Morrissey.
No, it's really strange how, only he kind of gets to do this stuff, as in like cancels tour after tour after tour. And I'm not saying his reasons for canceling aren't legitimate, because I don't know, they might be, but I mean, the correlation between his personality, his cult of personality that surrounds him, and the fact that these sorts of things keep popping up, to kind of keep his name in the news. I mean, the correlation is really difficult to ignore, in my opinion. And the way this stuff kind of happens, I mean, whatever. Like, it definitely rubs me the wrong way as a music fan, as a fan that feels that musicians should, you know, kind of give their all and, you know, do basically whatever it takes to entertain the fans, especially when you're on the level of a Morrissey where you're playing, you know, presumably huge venues, you have tons of fans, you know, you want to keep them satisfied. You want to, you know, do whatever you can to keep them coming back, if you will, especially at this stage in his career. But, I hate to keep like bringing up like the Pope thing or the infallible thing, but like Morrissey like gets away with everything when it comes to fans of Morrissey. Like, he is completely infallible, more so than Greg Ginn, more so than whoever else we were talking about earlier, Blake from Jawbreaker. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, he's a good songwriter. He's written some good songs in his time, but definitely not enough to warrant, I feel, the cult of personality that kind of surrounds him in everything he does.
I'm gonna agree with that. I've never seen Morrissey live. His tickets are actually kind of expensive. It's like an $80 show. So, I mean, I'm on the fence. For Morrissey, at $80, I'm on the fence. But he is notorious for really kind of like not doing a good job live if he doesn't feel like it. Franz Nicolai actually wrote a short thing about how he went to see Morrissey and how Morrissey like purposely flubbed all the Smith songs on stage. And I got to say, I agree, is especially when you're getting $80 a ticket, but even at like any amount, really, you really should be giving it your all because your fans are there to see you when they want to see you perform. So to purposely be bad or purposely just throw hissy fits over little things is quite childish and quite selfish. But on the other hand,
that's what sucks about it is like he knows he can get away with that shit because he knows that the fans will keep coming back. Like he's, you know, maybe more self-aware than probably any other artist in our quote unquote scene. You know, he's thoroughly aware of like his fan base and like how much they love him, and he feeds off of that, and as a result he can get away with stuff like that and then reschedule show or play another show and charge $80 again, and he knows everybody will come back to see him because I mean I don't know why they will, but they will. He knows they will is the point.
Why do you think Morrissey has this hypnotic power over people?
I don't know. Maybe because the Smiths are an important band to a lot of people. But
ding, ding, ding.
Here's my suggestion. People love like damaged goods, you know. And for example, like Ian MacKaye's a bad example, but like let's say, like the Subhumans. Yeah, that's great. Like the UK Subhumans, they've been touring literally nonstop for 40 years now. Well, almost 40 years, right? And they come out on stage, and they really kick it out. I mean, they give it their all. They kind of do, like, the same set more, like, every time, more or less, just, you know, a few different songs. But they really give their all towards it. But when Subhumans are coming around, people are like, yeah, you know, Subhumans come around, it's going to be a good show, we'll go, we'll have a good time. And, you know, they expect it to be good, and it's good. But with Morrissey, it's like, please, Morrissey, show us your soft, tender side. We want you to do it. And so when he actually does do it, it's that much more wonderful. Do you see what I'm saying?
I mean, a little bit, but I feel like that's – I feel like he shouldn't be held to a different standard.
I'm not holding him to a different standard. I'm saying why people let him get away with that.
Yeah, it's
like
– sure.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
I was about to go off on a very poorly worded metaphor that could get me in some real trouble. So I'm not going to use that metaphor, but I'm going to say is I think Morrissey fans want Morrissey to be great because on record he is so great. And so when he's not, they're like, please just do it. And then when he is great, because sometimes he is great, it's that much better. Whereas if he was always great, people would be like, oh, great, Morrissey's going to be good. It'll be a good time, you know.
Why is he – what's so great about him besides the Smiths?
I'll tell you what's so great about him is I'm a huge Morrissey fan. I'm a very big Morrissey fan. I'm a very big Smiths fan. I'm not a huge fan. Is Morrissey is able, unlike so many other artists – for two things. A, he's extremely poetic and his lyrics are very, very clever. He's very good at using specific details that seemingly have no relation put together to describe a very specific scenario that you understand exactly what he's getting at. Secondly, he's very good at playing the snidely whiplash in that in a lot of the songs, and even in real life, he's a real jerk in the songs where he's a bastard, but you still like him. And people kind of like villains more than they like heroes sometimes. And so like, for example, in Big Mouth Strikes Again, which is one of the most famous Smith songs, it's all about how he tells people to shut up and he should watch his language, but he doesn't. But you like him in the song. And that's what makes Morrissey so interesting.
That's a good point.
John, you need to get a t-shirt that says, "All my heroes are assholes."
Oh, I don't know. I think Dan Diggs kind of a jerk.
Let's do it.
In parentheses, it would say except the Melvins.
Melvins can be difficult. Like with the Melvins, if you the Melvins are cool. Well, actually, Dale Crover is probably the nicest guy in music. Buzz Osborne is cool, but it can be very difficult if you approach him on the level that he hopes to be approached at, meaning the similar thought process will be really cool. But if you approach him on an outside thought process, he'll be kind of a jerk, you know?
Sounds like an asshole.
Same with Jell-O, actually. Jell-O's cool, and Jell-O's like, I always want people to question me. But if you do actually question him, sometimes he gets really mad. And I don't know if that's just like – see, sometimes people think I'm mad at them when I'm just really interested in engaging in a debate. So maybe with Jell-O, he's not actually mad. He's just interested in engaging in a debate because he does talk a lot. Or maybe he's really being mad. I don't know. You know, Ian MacKaye is probably pretty cool. Although, I have no evidence whatsoever. But Ian MacKaye seemed like the coolest guy. But I wonder if he's got like kind of like Sammy Hagar-itis. You know, and it's like he'll be like nice to you and everything, but it's so completely non-committal that it like that you can't really count on him. I have no evidence for that. That's just the impression that I get. I could be way off. You know.
Who knows?
I don't know. Does he even know who Sammy Hagar is?
Ian MacKaye, he's got to know who Sammy Hagar. Yeah, he does. Because actually, Ian MacKaye and Henry Rollins' second concert they went to was Van Halen with David Lee Roth at the Merriweather Post Pavilion.
It doesn't tell you he stuck around for Van Hagar.
No, but I'm sure he knows. Come on, everyone knows who Sammy Hagar is. And I shouldn't be slandering Ian MacKaye because I have no evidence at all to suggest, but he's nothing but a nice guy. But sometimes, I don't know, maybe this is my personality, is when people are too nice, you get the impression that they're so non-committal that you can't count on them for anything. You know, for example, like let's say somebody was trashing Brian Yancey, as at a concert, so like, Brian Yancey's a real asshole. I'd be like, no, he's not. Brian Yancey's the man. Or Chris Moran's the man. You know, but like let's say, I don't know, Ian MacKaye was at a concert. And so he says, yo, John Gentile's an asshole. And Ian MacKaye might say, well, I don't really know. I can't say one way or another.
All right.
I think most people would agree with you that I'm an asshole. I'd probably agree with you that I'm an asshole, John. I think some people take pride in being assholes. Like, for example, Greg Ginn. Oh, I'm going to let that dog die. All right, we got some other shit to talk about?
Yeah, what are we talking about? Let's talk about something else.
All right, in completely unrelated news, postage rates are up. Postage rates are up. Small labels basically have faced a large increase in international shipping, which basically we interviewed a couple of the labels, and they mostly said, although shipping is going to go up, it might hurt their overseas distribution, but it's not going to put them out of business. What do you guys think of that?
I mean, it sucks for them in a lot of ways because, you know, knowing some of these guys who do these labels like I do, I know that some of the younger kids might have a distorted view of what their operations actually consist of. And when the fact is that for the most part, these guys and sometimes girls are doing these labels like out of their one bedroom apartments, they're doing them out of their basements, they're doing them out of their small homes, whatever. They're not doing them to make money is the point. Like, they're doing it for the love of the music. They're doing it because they, you know a bunch of bands that they love and they want to get this music out to as many people as possible. And it's not about making a profit or about, you know, doing anything that is going to put food on their table necessarily, which kind of sucks when the post office kind of increases these rates for them when they're trying to keep their prices as low as possible so that more people can have access to their music and to their vinyl, their CDs, whatever it might be. So, I mean, it's unfortunate, but at the same time, like, since labels have been around, I've always had to adapt to a changing market, to a bunch of different variables, and that includes, you know, postage rates. So, in a weird way, it kind of breeds like new innovation, I think, in that I feel like these labels might, you know, do some different stuff to kind of get around it, or, you know, do some different stuff to kind of offset the extra costs they're going to get from having to continue shipping the stuff like overseas or whatever it might be. So it's a great article. You know, you guys should definitely go read it if you haven't done so already. And yeah.
Actually, I'm going to add in one thing real quick. We interviewed a couple of labels. Unfortunately, a couple of labels got back to us too late. So I'm just going to read a quote from Jesse Townley of Alternative Tentacles, which is Jello Biafra's record label. DOA's on there, Unsane, a couple of Melvin's releases, those guys. Here's what Jesse Townley.
Melvin's.
He's got a thing that he brought up that none of the other labels brought up, which is the most political thing, which I think is fitting for AT. Here's what Jesse Townley said of Alternative Tentacles. Also, the only reason rates are going up is because the effing Republicans are douchebags. They mandate that the USPS has to have money to pay all employees' benefits ahead of time instead of paying them out as they come up, like literally every other part of the government and the private sector. because of this attack on a vital unionized public service in the name of fiscal responsibility, the USPS went from being financially fine to ridiculously in the red. Anyone who supports these creeps while also running a label or lamenting this move needs to smarten the fuck up. You're a part of the problem. So, Jesse Tanley of Alternative Tentacles. I love it.
Yeah, that's a cool statement, but the thing is, I mean, anybody who is going to be listening to him probably isn't a Republican. I don't know, I'm just playing the devil's advocate here, but I mean, I think we all at this point know, most people, I'd say 98% of people who are involved with or into punk rock are probably not Republican. You got Michael Graves, which I think he actually recently lamented and went back on, and then you've got a few other scattered people, but I don't know. It's like preaching to the choir when you bitch about the Republican Party over shit like this, you know. Unless you have a bigger platform to do it, and you know you have a bigger audience that's gonna that maybe will take what you're saying to heart. It's kind of like I don't know. You're just like shooting fish in a barrel.
Well, speaking about something that everybody can agree on, a punk rock bowling added Devo to their lineup, and it's going to sound like I'm getting payola from punk rock bowling, but I totally am not. But I am so psyched on this festival. Here's who's playing at Punk Rock Bowling so far. You got Flag, which we talked about earlier, The Damned, Turbo Negro, DRI, Devo, Subhumans, Bad Religion. It's going to be insane. It's going to be insane. Are you guys going to this? Are you guys psyched about it? Or do you guys just think it's a good show? What are you guys thinking?
I would like to go. I probably won't, just because it's going to be expensive if I do. And, you know, I have other stuff to pay for, but it's a really cool lineup. I've wanted to go to punk rock bowling for several years now. I've not gotten the chance. I know Chris and a lot of the other punknews.org cohorts have been, you know, many a time, and I've just never made it out. But it's great. Like, it's a killer lineup for hashtag old punks who wants to kind of relive their glory days and do so in a very fun setting like Las Vegas. Like, I really can't imagine anything that's going to be more fun than that, to be honest. But, yeah, it's – I would be looking forward to it if I was planning on going, but I'm not, so.
I too, would enjoy going. There you go, John. I'm gonna agree with you. And stop being a dick. I think it's a great festival, and I would love to go too, but I will not be going this year.
Yeah, I might go, I might not. I mean, flying out to a place, getting a hotel, flying back is pretty pricey, you know? Plus, you got to get off work and stuff, but I would really, really like to go to this. So I'm going to figure out a way if I can. But, I mean, do you guys think Las Vegas is that fun? I've been to Las Vegas once, and I didn't have that much fun. I mean, I had an okay time, but I didn't think Las Vegas in itself is that great.
The times that I went, at least for punk rock bowling, there would be, like, little excursions that people would make up to the strip, because typically the venue, the hotel, wasn't on the strip, and I never wanted to go to the strip. I don't have any interest in the touristy crap. I go to drink, play blackjack, bowl, and yeah, that's pretty much it. But I think it's a fun town. I think it's a fun town though.
Yeah. I've not only have I never been to Las Vegas, I've never been west of Chicago. That's the farthest west I've been in the U.S., so.
Ooh, you've never had In-N-Out Burger, have you, Brian?
No, and I don't really care. I get, like, irrationally annoyed when, like, people go to California for the first time or the first time in a while, and then, like, the first thing they do when they get there is they fucking Instagram their first meal at In-N-Out. I'm like, ugh, like, what? I mean, I'm sure it's good, whatever, but That's just weird to me. I don't know. It's like I went.
I actually got it.
No, go ahead, John.
Oh, sound guy Nerman just said he eats it In-N-Out every Wednesday and he loves it. But
Nerman knows what's up.
I like In-N-Out. I like five guys are In-N-Out. Chris, who do you vote for?
In-N-Out by a mile.
Mm-hmm. Yancey, have you had five guys?
Yeah.
Are you vegetarian, Yancey? I forget.
I am.
Oh, okay.
You're a recent convert, though, aren't you?
Like 6 years, not that recent.
Oh, 6 years? Really? Huh.
Yeah.
So I got a funny story about Las Vegas. Is the time I went out there, I went with my family, and I was kind of a brat, and it was over New Year's Eve, And so all my friends were having a huge party back on the East Coast. And honestly, I think it was probably the second best party my friends ever had. But I was kind of a brat. I was like, man, I would be with my friends. I would be with my family on New Year's Eve. So on like January 2nd, I said, well, I'm going to do my own thing because I want to go to the Star Trek exhibit. And my family's like, well, we'll go with you. I was like, no, I'm going to go myself. So I literally walked, I think it was like 6 miles or 7 miles because it was like, we were on one end, it was all on the other end. So I walked there and I go to the Star Trek exhibit. And it was like called Borg Attack or like Klingonomania or something. And it was the cheesiest thing I've ever seen. What it is it's like 5 or 6 hallways. And you walk through it. You guys know what a Borg is? In Star Trek, there's these things called Borgs. They're half men, half robots. They're basically zombie cyborgs. And so you like walk through these corridors and guys dressed in Star Trek outfits run out and they go, watch out, watch out. The Borg are attacking. And these guys dressed as Borg walk out and like shoot them. And the guys like fall down dead. And then you like just keep walking past them. And it was the cheesiest thing I've ever been in. And I was so glad my family didn't go because I have to explain it to them. But the funny thing about that is that job of dressing up as a Star Trek guy and getting shot like 10 times a day is like hell for 99% of the population and complete heaven for 1% of the population.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been funny, John, I bet if you had taken your family, they probably would have been like, yeah, John, this is great. Wow. Neat. We need to hang out more.
Oh, God, it was so bad. It was so bad. But thinking of things that aren't so bad, Yance, you got a good song for us?
I do. Going to play a song from a band from Pittsburgh called Brightside. And these guys haven't been around for very long. And there are a bunch of other bands called Brightside. They're probably not as good as they are. But they released an EP over the summer in 2012 called Seconds Matter. And it's really promising. I actually just reviewed it for Punk News. So if you go to punknews.org and search the reviews archive, you'll see what I think of it. But it's a good start for a young band. They kind of have a similar sound to the sort of quirky kind of personality driven pop punk bands that kind of are a big thing now. You know, bands like Joyce Manor and Run Forever and bands like that that really emphasize like vocals and like interesting, like very intensely personal lyrics and you know, things of that nature that I personally identify with very well. So this is from their EP Seconds Matter. You can stream the whole thing on their Bandcamp, which is brightsidepgh.bandcamp.com. This is the fourth song from the EP. It's called Cry About It. And once again, the name of the band is Brightside.
All right, and we're back. That's been the Punk News Podcast. I hope you enjoyed all the Black Flag and more Black Flag conversations. We want to thank everybody that's been on. We want to thank the Bronx. We want to thank Yancey. What was your band?
Brightside.
And Chris Moran, what was your band?
Roll the Tanks.
And we want to thank Scotty from Death with False Hope Records for recording that one riff that we play over and over and over. And the opinions expressed in the Punk News Podcast are solely the opinions of the people speaking them, not the opinions of punknews.org or any of its affiliates or anything else. So don't sue us. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Thanks, Nerman.
Yeah.